You are in the power zone now with DU. DU's Power Zone.
The Power Zone with DU is dedicated to bringing you insightful communication and resources that will guide you further in making your personal and professional goals a reality. Through candid, stimulating, and essential conversations, we focus on the 9 universal goals of success, which include career, finances, education, family, arts, attitude, health and wellness, leisure, and public service. Based upon these goals, we provide you, the listener, with practical measures of advancement.
Good evening, family, and welcome to the Power Zone with DU. Again, welcome to the Power Zone with DU. I am your host, Darlene A. Anderson, founder of Darlene's Utopia and author of Not Without a Fight, 10 Ways to Win When It Appears As If You Already Lost. And you have entered the Power Zone with DU. Happy Wednesday evening. I hope you all on the West Coast and East Coast, for that matter, because we're repping the East Coast. West Coast, you guys get this weather all the time. But East Coast, we are loving our 90-degree weather. It is beautiful out. I hope you all are enjoying your summer. You're laid back and taking in insightful and resourceful communication with the Power Zone. At this time, I want to welcome all our return listeners. Thank you for tuning in each and every Wednesday to the great conversation that we're providing. We're thankful to have you out here, and we're thankful that you're returning each and every week. Check out the archives if you haven't already. Pass the word to your family, friends, and network. It's going down on the Power Zone. If you are here for the very first time, well, thank you for tuning in, and we hope that you will be returning next Wednesday and every Wednesday thereafter to check out the Power Zone with DU. At this time, we would like to thank our sponsors, DDR Consultants. We're going to go out on a little break and share some information about DDR Consultants and some about other sponsors. And when we return, I'm going to speak to the topic and the guest for the show on this evening. We'll be right back, family, after this break.
Homeowners residing in the New York State area, are you in need of assistance with a pending foreclosure? If you answered yes to this question, then DDR Consultants may be the assistance that you seek. DDR Consultants provides a variety of services to assist homeowners residing in the New York State area with mortgage foreclosures and documentation, inclusive of discoveries and interrogatories, as well as oppositions to the bank's motion. DDR Consultants also provides services in property management, inclusive of advertisement, leasing, and maintenance. For more information about foreclosures and property management, contact DDR Consultants at 914-309-5443. Have you ever felt like no matter how hard you tried, no matter how often you tried, you can't win for always losing? Marriage, relationships, children, family, finances, work, the list goes on and on. You can't seem to ever get it right and are often left with that lingering feeling of doubt, wondering, why should I even attempt any further? If you have experienced these feelings, this book is for you. Not Without a Fight, 10 Ways to Win When It Appears As If You've Already Lost delivers transparency, resilience, strength, and practical measures that will encourage you to stay in the ring and fight for a few more rounds. You will feel rejuvenated and encouraged to continue as you affirm your winning moments are a breath away. As you read this book and reflect on your challenges in life, it is my hope that you will begin to incorporate the principles of winning into your daily regimen. You may feel beaten thus far. However, know from this moment forward, you are a winner. Say it, see it, believe it, be it. Order your copy of Not Without a Fight, 10 Ways to Win When It Appears As If You've Already Lost at DarlenesUtopia.com.
Welcome back, family. I am your host, Darlene A. Anderson, and you have re-entered the Power Zone with DU. I am the founder of Darlene's Utopia and author of Not Without a Fight, 10 Ways to Win When It Appears As If You've Already Lost. And I am passionate about the topic for this evening. It's interesting, and I know a lot of you can relate to this, that oftentimes you'll be invited to go out and you'll go out just because you've committed to going out. Your word is your bond. You really want to stay home, lay up in a bed, spend some time with your family. It was hot over this weekend. I had an event in the morning, and when I came back from the event with my daughter, I said, you know, I just want to just go to sleep. And she said, Ma, you've already committed. You can't go to sleep. You have to get up and you have to go, because you said you were going to go. And you all know, if you're a part of the 40-40 and older club, that your word is your bond. When you say you're going to do something, you have to do it. So as per my commitment, I had to get it together and head out to a book signing in Bedford-Stuyvesant, Brooklyn, New York. And I'm actually really happy that I made the decision to go, because it was one of the best experiences over the weekend. I had an opportunity to meet an interesting gentleman that I'm going to bring on the call for you all in a little bit. Upon meeting this young man, this old soul, I was totally drawn into him and knew that I had to have him on the call. As a social service provider of many years, I'm very passionate, committed to awareness, committed to education on various diseases, on not just physical but even mental health, and ensuring that people have stable housing, have stability, have health insurance, have food stamps, just an array of different things that we are passionate about here on the Power Zone, as well as our affiliate company, Utopia Network, Inc. So it is with great honor that we have this gentleman on to talk to awareness, to talk to the youth, to speak to the inner city youth specifically. I'm going to share a little bit about who he is, and then we're going to talk about how we met and all that good stuff, and I'm going to have him on the call, all right? So let's talk a little bit about who he is. Brendan Ortiz is a 25-year-old homosexual male and native of Brooklyn, New York. Ortiz is a motivational speaker, activist for HIV/AIDS, and author of the best-selling novel, The Pretty Boy with a House in Virginia. Brendan passionately speaks out on HIV/AIDS and its stigma because he, too, is HIV positive. He shares with inner city youth the period in his life in which he considers to be the beginning stages of darkness. At the age of 16, he experienced the tragic death of both his mother and father, which led to him becoming numb and ultimately resulted in him exploring the world recklessly with no care and contracting the HIV virus in 2010. The Pretty Boy with the House in Virginia chronicles Brendan's journey from hopeless to hopeful. To date, Brendan has spoken at countless events geared towards awareness for HIV/AIDS. In 2012, he spoke at El Puente for the Youth for Latino AIDS Day and Howard University in Washington during the same year. In addition, he has hosted various HIV/AIDS charity events. Brendan is dedicated to utilizing his testimony to promote awareness and actions of prevention. Having established What Does HIV Look Like, a New York-based nonprofit organization, and preparing to educate the masses on not just the diagnosis, but the stigmas that are attached to it, it is clear that he is on a mission of purpose. Ladies and gentlemen of the Power Zone with DU, without further ado, I introduce to you Mr. Brendan Ortiz, the pretty boy with a house in Virginia. Welcome to the call, Brendan.
Thank you for having me, guys.
I'm honored. I'm so excited. It was a pleasure meeting you. There's never been a turnaround in which I've met someone in less than a week. I've invited them on the show. It's been less than a week. We met on Saturday, and here we are now on Wednesday, and you're on the show. Congratulations. You're the first.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. I feel honored.
Let's chat up a little bit. I know that you've heard that you're an old soul.
Oh, brother, yes. Everybody tells me that.
You are. I could not believe when you told me that you were 25. And I will say this. Usually, you can never really state who you will learn from, who will be a role model, who will inspire you, because usually people think it will be someone of an older age to inspire you, because that's how society has molded us to think our role model should be. But you are definitely, at 25, a role model to many. I read your bio, but we like to get into who the person is beyond the title. Who is Brendan?
Well, Brendan is outgoing. Brendan has always been someone to uplift another person. My parents raised me to be really a happy child, or a very outgoing child, a child that, as you can see, I've smiled all through our conversation, telling you my tragic, and they told me to see the brighter picture within my life, no matter what it may be. So I'm just that person, which my partner would never say. He thinks that I'm not realistic, when I'm more so, I guess, optimistic.
Correct.
I don't really see myself as being a realist, because I live, you know, my life is so realistic, but it's so surreal at the same time. So it's just like I take it as it is, and I just keep smiling and keep going. So Brendan is just an outgoing, smiling, happy person, and just wants to uplift everyone. So I felt like my life can uplift everyone else. Even though it's not picture perfect, I see the brighter picture within the picture, if that makes sense.
It makes total sense. That's exactly who you are. When I was introduced to you, I was told, she said, you know, he has this awesome book. He's amazing. He's very open in talking about his life. He's right there. Go on ahead and talk to him. Introduce yourself to him. And it's not that I had in my mind what you would be like, because I always come to the table with no expectation of anything. But sitting down with you, having worked with the HIV/AIDS population as a COBRA case manager for many of years, you always see the dark side of it, so to speak. You always see the, unfortunately, the uneducated, the ones that aren't properly caring for themselves, the ones that are homeless, the ones that are on drugs. You always see that type, and you work from there. So you can, you get to a point where we show people where they were versus where they're at. But then when you see someone like you, who is really just living beyond the expectation of others, unfortunately, it's an amazing thing when you approach you. Family, he is beyond gorgeous. 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 His smile is infectious. He is so, to be 25 and be so educated on your own condition, as well as the community overall, the medical terminologies, and I want to get to those type of things, I was blown away. I sat there in amazement, and I love the fact because I didn't even tell you my background. So just listening to you talk and how much you knew, and then you kept saying you were telling me things different. You were using different terminologies, and then you would go, that is such and such and such. That is such and such and such.
It's second nature to me. Like, I'm learning, and as I'm learning, I'm teaching. Like, that's just something that I've been taught from young. Like, my mother was, and like I think I told you this, my mother was a camber worker, and you know, she's just always been someone that no matter what she explains, she wants to give you an explanation behind the explanation. So it's just always something that she wants to teach you, and that's something that she instilled in me. So that's why I think that's what I was doing on Saturday.
Yes, and it's great because you should never assume. My dad used to always say, always read a book as if you're reading a book out loud. If you're reading anything out loud, you always read it as if the listener doesn't know, and you always explain as if, like you said, the person that's receiving it doesn't know. And that's a beautiful gift. But sometimes, and it goes back to when you were talking about your smile and how you are, people sometimes do take that as you're not authentic. And then when you express
a lot.
Yes. Yes.
They were like, why are you smiling so much? I know your story. I read your book. What am I supposed to be, depressed?
Exactly. And when you express a lot and you try to explain, you give definition of things, it's to some people, it's too much. It's extra. But it really isn't. It's who we are by nature. We're caregivers.
Exactly.
We're missionaries. We're educators by nature. Never stop being you. Well, you already know that. How you want to be you from now to forevermore. Okay, so let's go to the tragedy. You're growing up now. You're from Brooklyn, New York.
Yes.
Born and raised in Brooklyn, New York. I'm a Brooklynite as well. Go Brooklyn, BK all day. Born and raised in Brooklyn, New York. Mother, social worker, father present in the household, and your dad was a professional as well, correct?
My father wasn't present in the household. He was present in prison. But he was attentive in the household as much as he can be. Getting phone calls during the day after school, getting several letters with math problems, and just trying to instill his father's shoes, I guess, and trying to instill the education and how important education was. So he was there, he just wasn't there physically.
Thank you for sharing that. We actually had a call a couple of months ago in which someone did 27 years, and they spoke to the same thing that you're sharing now, providing guidance and helping out as a parent from being incarcerated, and what that whole 27 years was like and how it was when he was actually released and he reentered the community and was back in his family's life. So thank you for sharing that, because that's important for some of our listeners to know that sometimes when parents are away, fathers or mothers, there is still hope in providing guidance as a parent. Thank you.
Especially in our community.
Especially in our community. Exactly. Thank you. So we're at this point now where there is a tragedy in your life and a shift after the passing of your mom.
Yeah. So I was about, I want to say around, I was 15. I was just returning from vacation in Florida, and she had been diagnosed several months before, diagnosed with cancer, that is, cervical cancer, that is, and which stems from HPV. And she was actually, you know, diagnosed with the cancer several months before, sending me away on vacation for a spring vacation. And then when I come back, she tells me that she's diagnosed with the cancer. And it just happened rapidly. Like, April 2005, she was diagnosed with the cancer. And then that November, she was hospitalized, which was November 2005. And then that Christmas 2005, she wanted to come home and spend Christmas with her children. And then that February, which was the following year, February 2006, when I was 16, she passed away.
Okay. Wow. I definitely know what it's like to lose a parent, and we've spoken about this on various episodes. There is nothing like losing a parent, especially a parent that you're extremely close to. And I'm sure that you speak about your mother with great admiration. What was the process like thereafter? Because in your bio, it states that you went through a life of being numb, a period of being numb and not caring. What happened after that, after the passing of your mom?
Well, after the passing of my sole provider, the person who was there, as I said, my father was in prison from the ages of when I was 5 until I was 16. Like, he came out 6 months after my mother passed away.
Yes.
So I was literally, she was my sole provider, like the only parent I had in the household. So I didn't really have any means of direction. My mom was very stern in everything that she believed in, and as far as being a single mother and a parent to an African-American child and a minority in general, she just wanted me to not be a statistic and not wanted me to run the streets and, you know, sell drugs and, you know, things that Brooklynites will do.
Yes.
And any minority at who loses a parent at a young age or is just misguided at a young age. She didn't want me to go through that. So I didn't go through that. I tried to, you know, respect her. Even with her being dead, I tried to respect the fact that, you know, she raised this young man, and I'm a strong young man, and she instilled all these morals and everything that she believed in, and I couldn't let her down. Like, I graduated high school on time, but I did have my ups and downs. During the time that she was going through her sickness, I was going through finding who I was as far as my sexuality. And dealing with that is something that I speak highly of because, and I'm really proud of who I am because of the fact that, I, like you said, you have spoken to people who have done drugs in the community and who are HIV positive. I've done drugs at 16. I was popping e-pills at 16. I was smoking weed at 16. At 18, I was trying coke. So even though I graduated from high school on time and I went straight on to college, I was still experimenting with drugs, and I was still so heartbroken and trying to, you know,
find yourself,
find myself, and not only find myself, but try to mend the broken heart that I had, and loving all these guys and just loving all these girls, because I was still flipping, flopping from girls to guys to girls to guys. So I was just trying to mend and substitute the love that I was missing because she left me. Which I used to say all the time, she left me, she left me, she left me. And now that I realize she didn't leave me, she's still with me, it's just she needed to relax. It was her time to go. God, you know, wanted her back home, wanted his child back home too. She already lived her life, and basically her mission was up already for this world that we live in. That is, we're only here temporarily. We're not here to stay here forever and ever and ever. And I understand that now, because once my mission is done, I will be ready to, you know, be deceased. And I accept it, and I, you know, understand it now. But at 16, who would understand their only mother, their only sole provider dying from a sickness that you tried your hardest to help her? Like, I went to radiation with her, missed school, went to chemotherapy with her, took my little brother to kindergarten. Like, I tried to be that husband. Even though I was her older son, I tried to be that husband figure for her so that she wouldn't feel alone, because she didn't have a man in her life at that time.
You're speaking to a lot right now, and this is, and I thank you for sharing this, because the audience needs to hear these things. And family, if you have young people at home that are going through similar things, or you know someone that can benefit from the show, it's important that they hear this, because you've just really spoken to so many different areas of things we've gone through, drug addiction, depression, sexuality.
Yes.
Lord, there's so many different things. And it's profound what you just said, because I was just speaking to some colleagues the other day, and we were speaking about single children, having only children, and what parents, what the role of parents for these children are. And one of the things that most parents will always try to prepare their children for, God forbid, an untimely exit. What would you do in the event that I was not here tomorrow? How would you be able to live? What would you do? Because statistics show that a lot of single children who lose their parents go into exactly what you just spoke to. If you go to an NAAA meeting, you will find that a lot of people utilize for the first time when their parents pass away.
Yeah.
When their parents pass away. So we always speak to preparing our children and our children able being able to continue living and sustain stability even in our absence. And parents, you need to discuss these things with your children, because as Brendan just said, we all will leave here. There is a time for each and every one of us, and our children have to identify that and be able to still be successful and productive. So thank you for sharing that. And you, I mean, you went into so many other components, but I really wanted to touch on that right there, because it's very important.
Yes.
And you actually go out into the schools and you educate young people on these things. I want to speak to that a little bit. What is that like for you? I know we sat and we talked, but I want you to let the family at home know what that is like, to come back into your community and really provide these empowerment sessions with you.
Well, I've been to several high schools. I've been to my own high school, which I graduated from, Clara Barton. I've also been to Thomas Jefferson High School. And I've also been to junior high schools, one which is, like, down in Best Buy on Lewis Avenue. I forget the number of the school, but it's right down where we met, actually, right down the block from where we met. And when I go into the school, and, you know, I'm not that old from graduating from high school, so I'm, like, knocking on the door. I can still go back to school. when I think about, you know, health and all the health awareness and everything that we've learned in school, we only have 2 pages of HIV and STD and what they're educating us on. And so when I go into the school, children do not know what HIV looks like, because honestly, HIV and any STD, physically, if you look at me, like she said, everyone, I am a gorgeous man, you would not notice that I am HIV. You would not notice that I am HIV positive, and I've been HIV positive for 5 years coming November. And I can honestly say that these children, when I go out to these schools, their age range is from 14 to 18 years old, and I speak to them, and they're so oblivious to the stigma that we think that, oh, well, HIV looks like this, and STD looks like this, and this person, like, he has an STD, or this person, like, he has HIV. Well, obviously, when I walked into them schools, they didn't even know until I projected out of my voice that I was HIV positive. And until I put on a projector my diagnosis, because that's what I do. I show you the real rawness of everything. I'm not sitting up there just saying, oh, well, I'm HIV positive, just because I can say that, because anybody can go up and say that. But I'm going to show you a diagnosis. I'm going to show you a paper that says, Brendan, such and such, is HIV positive since November 2nd, 2010. And this is what happened. You know, I lived a promiscuous lifestyle, such and such. You know, I loved this man who had HIV before me and didn't let me know that he had HIV. And we were together for 2 years. And from there, you know, we end up having unprotected sex. And then we end up inviting other people into our home and into our bed. And from that moment, it just became a mess. A big, messy mess that I do not regret. I did regret it in the beginning, but after going to church and praying on it and realizing that this is what God put in my mission and this is what He put in my path, that this is what I'm supposed to do, that I had to accept it and just notice that I am going to continue to educate the youth. And that's why I only go to high schools. I'm not saying that that's the only demographic I focus on, because I also speak to other, you know, other age ranges, but I focus on the demographic of 14 to 26 because of the fact that that age range has the highest diagnosis each year. And not only that, we also, as minorities, are the highest diagnosed each year. So I feel like our community needs to be educated more. You know, our parents are kind of afraid to speak upon it because all they say is, well, I don't want you to get pregnant. I don't want you to get this girl pregnant. I don't want you to do this. I know my mom used to say, if you kiss a girl, you're going to get her pregnant. So I know.
Definitely. We were afraid. And it's important to, you mentioned, and we're going to get to the movement of what does HIV look like. But
exactly.
I love your education of, because I did a lot of research on Brendan, and it was an article back in 2013, I believe, by the Brooklyn Chronicles. It was the Brooklyn Chronicles, correct?
Yes, Brooklyn Chronicles, yes.
I love how she actually, the blogger, focused on the fact that you take your health seriously. You are asymptomatic because you care about your life. You take
exactly.
your medication, you follow up accordingly. There is a process, family. And if you know anyone right now that is struggling in regulating their conditions, let them know. There is hope. People like Brendan are living with this diagnosis because they're caring for their bodies. They're understanding what a viral load count is, what your T cell count should be, what medications will work for you, what other secondary conditions you have to worry about, and how you combat that. I call him a gym. I call him a pretty boy, but I'm sure Brendan will tell you all, it takes work.
Oh, yeah.
And
it takes courage.
And courage. Correct.
You have to love yourself and embrace your situation. Like, she was touching on CD4 and viral loads. If you do not know what a CD4 is, a CD4 is the white blood cells that fight off the virus. And the viral load is the actual number from the virus that that detects that you are HIV positive. Obviously, my viral load at the time of my diagnosis was 66,108. At this present moment, I am undetectable.
Yes.
And I've been undetectable since November 14, 2010, going on 5 years. And I am proud to say that because when I first found out my diagnosis, I thought, you know, it was a death sentence. Literally. I thought, like, okay, my mom is dead. My father's committed suicide. Now it's time for me to go. Like, it's just my turn now. It's just how the cycle goes. And you know what? That's it. God said, you did your dirt. Now we're going to put you in the dirt. So that's how I felt. But then after doing my research and listening to my doctor, and I've been with the same doctor at Downstate Hospital for 5 years. And to this day, I do not have to see my doctor every 4 months like I used to when I first started. I see her every
yes.
year. I'm just living a regular life like any person that is negative. It's just I have to, you know, watch the way and be more careful, especially with my partner. I'm never going to have unprotected sex, even though the doctor does say that it's a 2% chance that he can contract it because I'm so healthy. I would never put him in that predicament because that's the predicament I was put in when I slept with my partner.
Thank you for sharing that. And that is important to share because a lot of people feel as if they are undetected. That means that they can go forth and do things that they wouldn't, for a lack of other words, if they knew that they were detectable, so to speak.
Exactly.
But it's important, just because you're healthy doesn't mean that you can be a reverse. And I'll even take it off of a sexual topic and bring it to just someone that I knew, and this was actually someone that was really close to me many years ago that was undetected, and he believed that because he was undetected, that meant that he had to stop taking his medication and he could start juicing. And
oh,
it's not to say that natural elements and daily regimens of fruits and vegetables don't work and don't help to combat diagnoses such as HIV/AIDS. That being stated, your medication is extremely important. You cannot stop taking your medication, and just because you are undetectable, as you said, does not mean that you should engage in unprotected sex, because that 2% is a lot. It's a lot.
Not only that, you can also contract STIs and STDs, like chlamydia and syphilis and things of that nature. I am clean from all of that because I protect myself. It doesn't take much to wrap a condom. It doesn't take much to contracept. It's very important.
On that note, I want to hear the song that inspires you. We should have been into our song of the show, but we just got caught up in conversation, good conversation. This is what the Power Zone is about. But we're going to take a small break, go out on our motivational song of the show. Bridget, what song inspires you and why?
Titanium. And the reason why Titanium inspires me and motivates me is because I believe that I'm strong. I believe that I am a titanium. I believe that nothing can break me. The only thing that can break me is to break me and make me stronger.
We're going to go out on Titanium, and we'll be right back after this break. Owners residing in the New York State area, are you in need of assistance with a pending foreclosure? If you answered yes to this question, then DDR Consultants may be the assistance that you seek. DDR Consultants provides a variety of services to assist homeowners residing in the New York State area with mortgage foreclosures and documentation, inclusive of discoveries and interrogatories.
as well as oppositions to the bank's motion. DDR Consultants also provides services in property management, inclusive of advertisement, leasing, and maintenance. For more information about foreclosures and property management, contact DDR Consultants at 914-309-5443. Power Zone family, have you heard the news about Utopia Network, Inc.? Utopia Network, Inc. is a New York-based 501c3 nonprofit organization. Their mission is to connect individuals and families with services that will promote stability and a better quality of life. They are committed to ensuring that the underserved communities have an understanding of the tremendous opportunities of productivity in their adversities and move to actions of advancement. To learn more about Utopia Network, Inc., visit them at their Facebook fan page, Utopia Network, Inc.
Welcome back, family. You are in the Power Zone with DU. I am your host, Darlene A. Anderson, founder of Darlene's Utopia and author of Not Without a Fight, 10 Ways to Win When It Appears as If You've Already Lost. And I am here with my very special guest, Mr. Brendan Ortiz, author of The Pretty Boy with the House in Virginia. Welcome back to the call, Brendan.
Thank you for having me again.
So let's speak about the book, and then I want to dive into the nonprofit and your upcoming event. Tell us a little bit about the book, The Pretty Boy with the House in Virginia. I love the topic. Let's talk about that.
Well, The Pretty Boy with the House in Virginia has nothing to do with me living in Virginia or owning a house in Virginia. It just has to do with the acronym HIV. I wanted to, you know, stem off and branch off from the fact that I started this campaign called What Does HIV Look Like? And then I wanted to use my title to kind of collaborate the campaign with my book, because The Pretty Boy with the House in Virginia, obviously, Pretty Boy with HIV, giving you the picture that Pretty Boy can have HIV, so it doesn't have a face, so HIV doesn't have a face. So The Pretty Boy with the House in Virginia just basically runs down my life from the ages of 14, from finding my sexuality, all the way to the age of 22. And you get to find out me finding my sexuality, going through a tragic incident with my mom passing away from cancer. Then you get to see how I felt about that, how I started to do drugs. And then after that, at 19... I actually met this guy who I fell in love with, and, you know, we met in college at BMCC, and from there we just loved each other for 2 years. From that point, my father, within the age of 19, my father committed suicide. He had just been released from prison when I was 16, so he had only been out of prison for 3 years. And coming out of prison after doing a 16-year sentence made him not completely, you know, altogether. He didn't know how to work in this world now, because 16 years is a big difference from being in prison in the early 90s and then coming out in 2000 and realizing, wow, there's a walking man now. It's not a don't walk sign. And he didn't know how to use phones. So his whole life, you know, in the beginning of his life, he was a drug dealer. From there, he came out and having to get a legitimate job, it wasn't something that he knew how to do. So he became depressed. He became emotionally unstable. And from that point, he decided that he wanted to kill his ex-girlfriend. And when he killed his ex-girlfriend, he decided that he did not want to go back to prison. And he told me that I need to get ready for a black suit because at that point he was not going back to prison and he was going into a coffin and that was the end of it. So he took his own life. And, you know, it took me a while. So you get to read within them chapters called Daddy Darius. You get to read through those chapters and you through that chapter and find out that, you know, I love my father unconditionally, no matter what, but at the same time, I did not approve of him killing himself. You know, things people do, you have to sit back and you have to realize, okay, this is their choice in life, and you know what? You can't dwell on it because you have to live your own life, especially if it's your parents. Your parents live their life. They want you to live your own life, but they have instilled things in you so that you can project your life into a positive light without, and they, oh, my parents always told me, I don't know about anybody else's parents, but my parents always told me they wanted me to be better than them. Correct. And I think that's the greatest thing they always told me because, you know, they, even though he, you know, committed suicide and he had the worst life I can see in my life, I cannot knock him for it. I just had to embrace him and love him. I hated him in the beginning.
For who he was.
Yeah, exactly. For who he was and for what he did to himself. But yes. Then, like, I had to embrace who he was. Yes. From there, you get to find out me finding my diagnosis and how I felt when I found out my diagnosis. My book is very graphic. My book is very detail-orientated. It has a whole lot. You can literally picture me walking out the clinic screaming down the street, talking about why me, what did I do? I thought I did everything right my parents told me to do. You can literally picture it, and you can read my book within 2 hours from chapter 1 to chapter 13. And my last chapter.
Great references. Your last chapter?
My last chapter is Walk by Faith and Not by Sight. And the reason why I said that that would be my last chapter in that book is because I noticed that I used to walk by sight, and meaning by walking by sight, I used to see things and think that that is what Brendan should be doing, and not getting down on my knees and praying to the Lord and letting him project into my life what I should be doing. So that's why now, from this point on, from the book releasing, I have been at peace in my life, and I have been excelling in my life because of the fact that every night before I go to bed and every morning before I walk out my door in Jersey, because now I live in a beautiful home in Jersey, God bless me.
Yes.
I walk out my door and I say, God, walk my path with me. Walk me to my job. Walk me back home. Make sure I get home safely. Make sure that, you know, Brendan is back and realizes and humbles himself. And not because of all the success I have accomplished, because being successful over HIV, because I really, everybody says, well, you're so successful because you're HIV positive. No, I'm not successful because I'm HIV positive. I'm successful because of the fact that I took my diagnosis and switched it and prayed on it and continue. And this is one prayer that I used to, because I used to live in Crown Heights, Brooklyn, and my house was like the trap house. The trap house is basically a hole in the wall, and it was not a home. It was an apartment, and I just felt like it was a whole bunch of negativity there. So I used to pray every night and say, God, heal me, guide me, and protect me. And that is my prayer to this day, and he has overseed me to see that I am a very humble child, because I'm still a child of God, and I am excelling because of him.
Resilience is written all over Brendan's face. It is what he exudes, resilience, resilience. When I thought about this poll, it was really speaking to the turnaround, as you said, and not letting your diagnosis define who you are, define your future, define your purpose. You have been resilient, it appears, within the past 5 years. Not even that, because just thinking back to your youth and listening to some things that you share, you've always been resilient. It was just a matter of bringing it to the forefront and executing it. So I want to just say kudos to you, because what you're sharing right now, I'm sure some people on the phone need to receive that on this evening. So, yes, congratulations to you in those efforts. I now do want to speak to your nonprofit. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Okay, well, my nonprofit is actually called What Does HIV Look Like? And like I said, it started off with a campaign. The campaign started off in 2012. And we decided, a nonprofit doesn't take a day. It takes several years to develop. And I didn't know where I wanted to go with it. I was blessed on Brooklyn Pride this year to have an office space that I can just use whenever I choose to. And so I decided, you know what, we're going to use this office space and we're going to project what does HIV look like into the world. So August 15th is the launch of What Does HIV Look Like Monologues, which is branched off from What Does HIV Look Like Campaign, which is the nonprofit. We are doing this show performance because it shows five different individuals. We have all different races. We have a Hispanic guy from Philadelphia. We have a Hispanic lady from, well, she's Mexican and black, so I guess she's a minority. From the Bronx. Then we have these two, we have this Caucasian guy from New York, and then you have myself, and then we have this Puerto Rican guy from Queens. So we have a whole bunch of people who are coming together and they're projecting their stories. Each story is so different from one another, but they combine and make a collaboration that is so powerful. Each of these powerful individuals are willing to share their stories to educate everyone because they feel that what HIV does not have a face. And if you follow me on Instagram, you'll follow that, you'll see that we are promoting this show because it will be a tour and it will be going around the cities. We're going to do five cities right now. Well, right now we're starting in Brooklyn because that's my hometown and I need to educate my people first.
Yes.
And it's going to be a great, great opportunity to bring out your teenagers, to bring out, you can bring anyone from the ages of 12 because I had people who were reading my book from the ages of 12. You can bring anybody from the age of 12 all the way until 65 if you want. Like, this is no age range. We just want everyone to be educated on this this virus and this epidemic that's going on, especially in our community. What does HIV look like stemmed from me going to these high schools and these junior high schools and finding out that these students did not think that I was HIV positive just because of the shell that I perceive when I walk into a room.
The misconception of, and we were talking about this this past Saturday, that whole the monster thing and the monster
exactly
being dark and gloomed and just a shadow of just all of these negative things, bad teeth, bad skin, not smelling good, when in essence that's really not what it's about. Those are individuals that have succumbed to their diagnosis versus individuals that choose to live and better themselves, as you were saying, which these spaces will be doing on August the 15th, showing that HIV does not have a face. It doesn't have a face. So my question to you is, if HIV doesn't have a face, what does it have? Have you been asked that question?
No, and that's a great question. I think you should ask that question at the event. And you should ask that question because we're going to have a panel, so you should ask that question to every one of us. But I'm going to answer the question right now. So it doesn't have a face, but it does have a persona.
Exactly.
And what I mean by that is that each and every one of us who are HIV diagnosed and who aren't HIV diagnosed, we all have a character trait. We all have something that we all can be familiar with. Because no matter what, HIV is there, and I just need everyone to know that I am very optimistic, and I smile, and, you know, my character, you would never think that I am HIV positive, but my persona and the person that I carry myself and tell people that I am HIV positive, you will know because that's who I am. And that's what I am. And that's what I carry with me in my blood.
Yes. Well said. Well said. So we're going to share some information, family, about the August 15th event, What Does HIV Look Like, the monologue. You all can check it out on our episode page. And if you are not tuned in right now to the page, I'll share some information for you until you're able to log on and check it out. So it's going to be on August the 15th at 475 Atlantic Avenue in Brooklyn, New York at 3 p.m. And there's going to be HIV testing, light refreshments. They're going to do a whole monologue. I'm excited about this. You know, this show is for the grown population. But we do have some adolescent listeners, so I'm sure they may not be familiar with this, but some of them may. I like the way you kind of like related it to the vagina monologues.
Yes.
You say, you know, it's going to be like the vagina monologue, so I'm like, oh my God, I really have to come out for this. I'm just so excited.
Yes, nobody knows about, like, they're like, what is a monologue? And I'm like, as soon as I say vagina monologue, they're like, oh, okay, I know what you're talking about now. Oh, really?
Exactly. So I'm really excited to come out and support even our affiliate organization, Utopia Network, Inc. We are purposeful in awareness and educating youth because there are some things that we haven't even touched on this show that really comes out of adolescent awareness, depression. Brendan, you spoke to, you know, suicide. We spoke to substance abuse at a young age. There are so many different things that is geared around what you're doing right now, and you're bringing awareness at a bigger plateau, even outside of your diagnosis. Your diagnosis is only the entrance to the work that you're doing. You're doing a greater service. God is really using you in a multitude of ways for the community, and I'm just so, I can't believe, again, that you're only 25 doing this work.
Thanks a lot.
You're very, very much welcome. Family, I want you all to come out and make sure that you join Brendan Ortiz and his efforts to bring awareness. What does HIV look like? The monologues, again, 475 Atlantic Avenue, August the 15th. All of the information is there. If you want to follow Brendan on Facebook, Instagram, you can go to our site and get all of his information. And again, please come out and meet him. Your life will be changed. Join his mission and tell everybody about it because he definitely needs support in ensuring that the word is passed on throughout the community. And congratulations on your nonprofit. That is a big success in itself. And again, I'm going to keep saying 25 because you're not part of the 40-40 club. So at 25, I'm not even thinking about my nonprofit. So just kudos to you at a very young age for taking those steps that someone said on a prior show, sometimes you just have to step at the cliff. I'm paraphrasing it, but step to the cliff, swallow your spit, and jump. You just have
exactly.
to do it. And you've done it. So congratulations, and thank you for joining us on the Power Zone on this evening.
Thank you for having me, everyone.
Have a good night, family. Remember to tune in next Wednesday. Tell your family and friends and networks about the Power Zone with DU. Until we meet again, be safe and prosperous.